Hello, and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast is number 1,121. The topic is mindset, and the title is Improved Perspective to Help Technique Regulation. That sounds like a ridiculous title, but I wasn't sure what else to name it. But really what I wanted to do was just talk about how our mindset of how we approach our workouts, our exercises and things can help or hurt how well we perform the movements. So I want to improve our perspective of how we're looking at what we're doing to help us then be able to do it better. That's the idea. What the question I want to present that you ask yourself is, what am I doing this for? So when you look at an exercise, when you look at something in your training, I want you to ask yourself, what am I doing this for? Now, we actually talked about this in a couple podcasts ago, podcast 1117. It was a mindset podcast titled How to Get Motivated to Work Out. And we talked about the idea of like why. Like the why do I want to work out? Because I want to be healthy. No. Why do you want to be healthy? Because I want to be around for my loved ones. You know, things like that. So we talked about how asking this question, what am I doing this for, can help with motivation. But I actually wanted to talk about today how that same question can also help us perform our exercises better and get more from our training, kind of help us be able to follow our training in a more kind of correct way. So what I want to go through is give you a couple examples on how the person not following this mindset was having worse technique, worse results, weren't going to get what they wanted from their training. But if we do follow this question, this perspective, then we can get better from it. So one client, for example, this is actually just a member. This wasn't a client of mine. I was working out the other day in the gym, and I own Brutal Iron Gym. It's not a franchise. I kind of created it myself, but by no means by myself. So thank you to my mom, my dad, my brother, now my wife Meredith, all of the friends and amazing, awesome human beings who did everything with me to get this place set up. More people than I could thank. So this is a gym that I own and I created, but I did not do it by myself. So now why I said all that was this is an open gym, meaning that I do train a lot of people from the gym, but not every member of the gym is my client. So there are people who come to use Brutal Iron Gym. They get awesome workouts in. They love the equipment, but they don't work with me directly. So the other day I was working out and one of the members was in here and he was going through his workout relatively quickly. It was just kind of like watching them move, and I do this. It's impossible not to watch people exercise. I try to stare at the floor and not pay attention, but sometimes I do pay attention. So the person was going through the motions. That was essentially what they were doing. It was like, okay, I have chest press for 10 reps, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, rack the dumbbells. And it's like, oh my God, it just hurts to watch because they're just checking things off the list. They're not actually paying attention to how well they're actually doing them. The downside is they think they're doing it. They think they're paying attention. They think they're thinking. But they're not. Oh my gosh. So it's just so frustrating because you can see the flaws they're making. And it's like, oh, if you just did this one or two other things, you'd get so much better results. So I try not to get too lost in that. But the reason why I bring this person up was they were getting to the end of their workout. They were doing bicep curls, and they were atrocious, horrible. It was just like throw the handle to the top, flex the bicep, drop the handle to the bottom. Throw the handle to the top, flex the bicep, drop the handle to the bottom. And this person, I know who they are, and I'm not going to say who they are, but there was no special technique. Like this wasn't, it wasn't performed that way on purpose by any means. It was just, I think I'm cranking through these just so I can get them done. So just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh yeah, they're burning. I'm great. Leave out the door. That was it. They didn't even unrack the damn weights, so they got yelled at. But so it was just get to 10, drop the handle, leave. And I'm thinking to myself, is what the hell did they think the purpose of the curls are for? Like, what are they doing this for? And I know this person, so they were doing it to get bigger arms. But just doing 10 reps and having it somewhat burn, but the 10 reps looking like shit, is not going to get you bigger arms. It might get you bigger arms when you first start because you previously have been doing nothing. But once you have some base of fitness, doing things half-assed or no-brained isn't going to get you anything. So how you would get bigger arms from bicep curls is to focus on muscle damage. You need to damage the muscle tissue. What happens then is your body takes the food that you eat, and while you're sleeping and kind of resting outside of the gym, it uses the protein of that food to go in and repair the structures of the body. Now, it needs carbs and fats for the energy to do the repairs, but the actual material that is used to do the repair is protein. Okay? So, we have to have muscle damage from our exercise, so that way the body takes protein and fixes that damage with bigger muscle. Yeah. Now, in order for us to maximally damage the muscle, we have to actually pay attention to the muscle while we move. There are very specific kind of intentions that you should have whenever you're doing an exercise. Way long ago in podcast number 220, so just podcast 220, so forever ago, I'm looking at it now, that was April 6th of 2019. Oof. So we did a podcast and we talked about, it's titled Muscle Intention versus Movement Intention. So you can Google this. Just Google Brutal Iron Gym Podcast 220, Muscle Intention vs. Movement Intention. So the short version of versus. So muscle intention versus movement intention. If you're an explosive athlete or strength athlete, and you're doing an explosive lift or a strength lift, you're focusing on the movement as a whole, okay? Whereas if you're working on isolating a muscle or trying to intentionally damage the muscle, then you have muscle intention. So when you're doing an exercise, you should be have a muscle-based intention to the movement or a movement-based intention to the movement, to the exercise, okay? So what am I doing this exercise for? Am I doing this exercise to be good at this movement as a whole, such as squat, bench, deadlift? So the movement itself is the goal. Or what am I doing this for? Am I doing it for a specific muscle, as in I want to damage and grow my biceps muscle? So it's very important that we consider this. We consider, am I doing this to just be good at the movement, to complete the movement, or am I doing this to intentionally focus on the muscle? Very, very, very different ways of training. Very different, vastly different. If you do not know the difference, I guarantee 100% you're missing progress out of the work that you're already doing. So you could be getting more progress out of the work you're already doing if you learn about this concept. So podcast 220, muscle intention versus movement intention. Please go listen to that if you are not aware of those kind of differences. So this person was just trying to get the movement done, just rushing through. They got to their number and they dropped the machine, left and done. They did not get what they wanted from the bicep curls because they weren't paying attention to what they were doing it for. What am I doing this for? Bicep curls to get bigger muscles. I have to then focus on my muscle so I produce muscle damage. Boom. That's what we need to have. The connection of those phrases and concepts and mindsets. I need to know what I'm doing this for. If I know that, I can then perform it better with the right intention, with the right focus. Okay? Another example is a client was doing a side plank. So I'm going to kind of talk you through this so you can mentally think of it. If you're doing a side plank, so you're on your elbow. So they're not a side plank on your hand. They're doing a side plank resting on their elbow. And they have their body straight. So their elbow is touching the ground, their feet are touching the ground, and their body's straight doing a plank. We're then doing what's called a starfish side raise. Fantastic name. So if you don't know what that is, just YouTube it. Starfish side raise from side plank. Okay, something like that, and you'll see it. But in a sense, what they're doing is they're in that planked position, side plank position. They're going to raise their leg that's on the top, and their arm that's on the top, and make themselves look like a star. Okay, like a star. Now, you're resting on your one elbow, the other arm's extended up towards the ceiling. Your one foot is pushing into the floor to keep your hips up in the air, while the other leg raises up towards the ceiling. So you're looking like a star. Now, this is very, very, very specific for this person. This exact movement was chosen for an exact reason. They're going to raise up into that. They're going to come back down to a basic side plank. Then they're going to raise back into that starfish position, then come back down into the side plank. The reason why we're doing it for that athlete is it helps with side-to-side hip bracing. It makes you brace against your body weight equally in each hip. So you'd be doing it on your right leg, with your right leg down to the ground, your left leg up in the air, and then you would be switching to the other side with your left leg down on the ground, your right leg up in the air. So what you would often see is one side is going to be a lot stronger than the other side. This is important to recognize because it means we have a strength slash coordination slash weight acceptance difference to one side of our hip versus the other. That is going to show when we do max effort squats and deadlifts or other types of lower body movements. So if you're somebody who has a what's called a hip shift in the bottom of your squat or a hip shift as a barbell passes your knees in a deadlift, that what that means is your body is using one side of your hips versus the other side to more dominantly brace the position and the weight. So when it gets maximally challenged in that position, it dumps more effort into one side than the other. That's why your hips shift. A starfish side raise, where you do repetitions of raises, that forces you to turn on, turn off, turn on, turn off hip stability bracing. Just like every time you would do a rep of a squat, a rep of a squat, a rep of a deadlift, a rep of a deadlift. Every time you're having to reabsorb into that position, get out of it. Reabsorb into that position, get out of it. What we're doing with the starfish side raise is you're practicing the isolative strength of the hips. So the lower back can't take over. The hamstrings can't take over. Your quadriceps can't take over. Hell, your adductors can't even take over. You're isolating the external rotation, external stability bracing of the hips. That is amazing and awesome, and it's a wonderful exercise because it also helps improve shoulder socket stabilization strength, which helps for just general health and posture, and it also helps with bench pressing stability. It helps with upper back stability in a back squat. There's a lot of crossover to shoulder socket stabilization strength. You're also then working on your abdominal muscles and how your abdominal and other core muscles factor into lower back bracing and lower back health. So a starfish side raise helps with hip shift in the squat and deadlift. It helps with shoulder socket stabilization strength, which helps a bunch of stuff, okay, including our bench press and general health. It also helps abdominal and core-based strength to improve lower back health. Awesome stuff. Great things. All of that is very good. Now, what was happening was the client felt challenged in that movement and they struggled to kind of create the balance. Makes sense because they struggle with hip shift in their squat. They struggle with this being a weak concept. The downside was, is since they felt weak in it, they shifted away from it and they changed it. They changed it into a movement where they no longer raised their arm and their leg. They stayed in one consistent tension. Rather than have to turn off, turn off, turn on, turn off, they stayed in one consistent tension and they just allowed their hips to kind of like sag to the floor and then they raised their hip up. They allowed their hips to sag to the floor and raise their hip up. So really all they were doing was like up and down, which would represent if you're standing left and right, hip shift. So they're just letting both hips dip into the bottom, then raising up to the top. They're not doing individual braced hips where one hip has to anchor and move based off the other. They're moving the hips together. That's going to allow the dominant hip to make up for the weak hip, and we don't get the benefit that we needed. So because they changed the movement, even to a small degree, they were still in a side plank. They still had their quote-unquote hips moving and hips involved, but they were doing it in a different way. It lost all the damn benefits. They still got the shoulder stabilization, but since they had constant tension, it was easier on shoulder stabilization. They still got some core and like kind of lower back health development, but it was less because it was easier because they had constant tension. Because they ran away from the challenge of the movement, they lost the benefits of the movement. Now, is it possible to know what every single exercise of your program is for if someone else writes your program? I'll tell you this, no. Because I have gone through with, like, I taught at the university level for 7.5 years, and I've hosted dozens of interns through the gym who want to be strength and conditioning coaches. It can take an hour for me to explain one single workout, why I would pick and choose movements and their alternatives and why you would want pros and cons of different alternatives. It can take an entire hour to explain one correct exercise, like one correct workout. So if I have, you know, 30 plus clients and I'm writing 4, 5, 6 workouts per program, so maybe they have 4 workouts they repeat for 4 weeks in a row. I don't have 4 hours to explain it to every, to that one person. I do not have 4 hours to explain every reason why every exercise is selected. And I don't have time to do that over 30 plus, 40 plus, 50 plus people. There's just literally not enough time to do that. Now, that stinks. I absolutely wish that I could go through and do that, because that would be an amazing, amazing learning opportunity to be able to go through and hear exactly why the person picked every single exercise. Now, I think it's such an awesome opportunity that I've made podcasts about that. So we actually have a podcast. By the time you're listening to this one, it'll have been yesterday's podcast. And it was a training podcast 1120. It's a client workout explanation, muscle building with limited equipment. I actually go through and I actually explain a workout that I wrote for a client, why I picked individual exercises based on what their goals were and what equipment they had. So it's a pretty cool opportunity. You can actually get that. And if people like that as a podcast, I'll make a podcast about that every damn day if that's what you wanted. Because with 1 hour, I can talk to hundreds of people. That's what is awesome about a podcast. So is it possible for each individual person to know what each individual exercise is for? Unfortunately, I can't explain that. But with every exercise I ever prescribe to everyone, there's a tutorial video connected from YouTube. So there is a video that they can watch, learn the technique, and a lot of them have the explanations for why and or just kind of explaining how to do it. And with every client I have, we have a journal feature where they're encouraged to ask questions. So if they have a movement and they're like, oh, I don't really understand this one and it's kicking my butt, you know, do I really have to do this, or is there something else I can switch to? All of my clients have access to ask me that question. So they have a journal feature. They have an accountability chart. We communicate every single week. They can exchange videos of how they're doing in the movement. And I send back direct technique advice based on their videos. I spend a lot of time on each individual client compared to other methods of how people can do training. I spend a significant amount of time per individual. It's how I'm choosing to do it. So that way I can do a better quality. If I were to lessen my quality, yes, I could work with more people and make more money, but I'd feel like shit and I know that I wouldn't be giving my best. So it's a choice that I'm making, and I'm happy with my choice in the sense that I spend as much time as I can for each individual person based on the amount of people I have to work with to pay bills and things, you know, that kind of stuff. So I wish I could spend more time with everybody. I do genuinely wish that. I try to create as many avenues in which we can communicate as much as I can. Yes. But unfortunately, you know, you don't get to know why every exercise is in everything. But if you write your own program, then hopefully you're picking something for at least one positive reason. So if you write your own program and there's 5 exercises, I hope that there was at least one reason why you picked each of those 5 exercises. So you will be aware of at least one benefit of what every movement is. So if you were to ask, what am I doing this for? If you wrote the 5 exercises, you better damn well hope you know what each of those are for, because why else did you pick them? So this question will help. In the sense to where if you chose the starfish side raises, or if you asked me in the journal or send me an email, I promise you to communicate with me as much as you possibly can if you're one of my clients. Please, ask me a million questions. I'll get back to you as fast as I can. I don't want you to feel like you ever can't communicate. So please communicate as much as you can. I'll figure it out, or I'll make a podcast with the answer. I'll find a way to get back to you. I promise. So if we're doing a starfish side raise, there's a reason why we chose a starfish side raise over a different movement. If that movement, the starfish side raise, if that feels so challenging that you can't do it at all, well then yeah, it's probably reasonable to make a small change, you know, or to switch to something you can do. But if you're supposed to do 10 reps and along the 10, you maybe fall out of position one time, well, that's the level of challenge that's kind of appropriate. If you blow through all 10 and it's not hard, then it's not going to get you progress, right? If I could already do it, why would my body change from it? Makes sense. So for me to get a body change, there has to be some challenge and discomfort. My body has to feel like it's inadequate in some way. It has to feel like, oh, I don't have great stability. I need to get better at stability. I don't have great strength in this muscle. I have to get that muscle a lot stronger. So there has to be some degree of challenge to the movement for it to create change in us. So when you're doing an exercise, before you would change it or modify it, you want to ask yourself, what am I doing this for? So that way, if you do make a change or a modification, you don't lose the original intent, the original point of doing the movement. Okay, the purpose. So that's another reason why we got to ask, why am I doing this for? What am I doing this for? The last example we'll give is a client was told to switch their workouts and switch their movements at 4 weeks. They didn't. This is somebody I work less directly with. I kind of like guide them on decision making. We don't communicate every week. We don't have like a typical workout, like typical client structure. So we just kind of do guidance. And this is because they're a trainer. So I told them, I said, hey, you're going to want to do these movements, but after 4 weeks, switch those out. Well, they didn't. They waited till week 7, messaged me and said, I feel like total crap. I've missed a couple workouts. I have no motivation. Destroyed. What should I do? So I said, oh man, no, that sucks. You feel that way. That's so surprising. You know, what movements did you switch to? Maybe they switched to something that was like ridiculous or something that was overwhelming, or maybe what they chose was just too many like heavy overloaded movements in a row. There was just something maybe wrong with what they chose to change to. Well, the phone was pretty quiet and I was like, hello. And they're like, I didn't change anything. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, why did you not listen? So I said, why didn't you change? And they said, well, from week 3 to week 4, I made improvement. And I was like, I wonder if I can still kind of get better at these movements. So week 4 to week 5, I made some improvement. Week 5 to week 6, it kind of stunk and I didn't really do that great. It kind of like flattened out. Then from week 6 to week 7, I felt like total crap, horrible, and now I'm just destroyed. And I said, well, there's a reason why we would switch after 4 weeks. So we explained it and it was a really good conversation. But the reason why they had chose to stay with those movements was because they wanted to continue to push their performance of those movements. The downside was, is when I presented the question to them, I said, what were you doing that movement for? And they said, what do you mean? And I said, well, if we look at this deadlift variation, what are you doing this deadlift variation for? To get better at deadlifts. I'm like, yeah, no shit. So what specific aspect of deadlifts does this help you get better at? And they said, oh, okay, I see what you mean. And we were talking about the rotation of their hips. So we were talking about a conventional deadlift on how they can activate their upper hamstrings and do the lockout of the conventional deadlift through upper hamstring and glute contraction rather than lower back contraction. Got rid of all their lower back pain, and they're freaking crushing things and doing really well. So I said, what are you doing this for? And they said, oh, okay, I see. So to improve my hip rotation. I said, okay. So weeks 1, 2, 3, 4, we made great improvements and we learned how to rotate our hips better. They said, yeah. And I said, okay. Well, typically if you continue to do movements, especially weighted ones, not body weight ones, but weighted ones, for longer than that, if you do them in weeks 5, week 6, week 7, weeks 8, and some programs even go 12 weeks, oh, that's horrible. You start to just beat the living shit out of the body and it can't recover. How hard you have to work to your truest, ultimatelist, like most potential at that movement, you have to get into the nitty gritty of percentages of what you're capable of to get any benefit or any improvement in performance every single week that you go. So weeks 1 through 4, it's challenging each workout. You can kick your own butt each workout. You can try your absolute best. But it doesn't maximize the truest potential of your body for that movement because you're still learning it. Now, in that meantime, you're learning what the mechanics of what you want to learn, and you are damaging and stressing the muscles, but you haven't yet maximized the muscle's truest potential to where you start breaking down in form to try to squeak out an extra rep here or there, or you add 5 or 10 more pounds than you really should. The movement kind of doesn't look that great, so you're causing a lot of stress to connective tissues because you're moving in odd positions. You're trying to hide certain muscles that are weak. The quality of the performance decreases the longer you go. Therefore, the damage outside of just muscle tissue increases the longer you go. More joint stress, more central nervous system stress. You get just worse off, like your immune system's crap. Like your body just feels destroyed if you continue too long. So when I told them to switch at week 4, it was so that their nervous system didn't get destroyed, so that their connective tissues and joints, you know, didn't get destroyed. It was going to be enough. 4 weeks was enough to learn the movement pattern, challenge those muscles. They should have switched to the things that I gave them. We're still focused on that hip rotation, but it would have done it in a slightly different position, slightly different weight loads, and it would have stayed more muscle-only damage, not connective tissue damage, central nervous system damage, all this other stress. So when I asked them, what are you doing that deadlift for? The purpose was to get better at hip rotation. And I said, okay, what was I asking you to switch to in week 5? Did that still involve hip rotation? They said, oh, yeah, it did. I said, well, then why didn't you want to switch? Well, because I was trying to get better. I was trying to beat my numbers of the first movement. And I said, well, what are you doing that first movement for? To get better at that movement? Or to get better at the concept it teaches so you can get better at regular deadlifts? And he said, yeah. I see what you're pointing out. So improving their performance on that singular lift was not the goal. They shouldn't continue to beat their head against the wall to try to improve performance on that singular lift. We wanted the concept and the movement pattern that was being taught by it. And we could have continued that with the other exercise they should have switched to in week 5. But because they lost sight of what they were doing it for and started chasing numbers, they got beat up and everything went downhill. They now need more time to recover, and they missed more workouts, they missed more progress. So those movements were to address issues that would help them in their main goal of squat, bench, and deadlift. But by chasing the movements, the numbers of the movements, not the bigger picture, they actually sacrificed progress towards the squat, bench, and deadlift. They lost time, and they put themselves at risk for kind of a chronic reoccurring injury. So without knowing what we're doing it for, we can miss the benefit. We need to ask this question. What am I doing this for? If I ask myself that question, I can better adhere to the technique while I'm doing it. I can better understand why I'm doing it. And I can better understand when I need to move away from it. So we can better get, like, we can just get better progress, better results. We get more out of our efforts if we remind ourselves of what we're putting in those efforts for. Okay? So I'm hoping that these stories and this general concept is going to help you kind of bring that perspective into your training, and it'll help you improve your technique for specific exercises and improve your adherence to how your programming is structured. Awesome. Well, if you have any questions, if you have anything you want to ask about, email us at brutalirongym@gmail.com. I'm always here. I'm always happy to help. I love doing this podcast. So if there's anything you want to learn about, let me know. So thank you for listening. Now, if you need any help with programming or anything like that, if you want to learn more about any of this stuff, like, so for example, we have a trainer education service now where it's a 16-week program. It helps teach you everything that I used to teach in my college classes. So you're getting basically a college education. And we're going to help you get a discount on a training certification at the end of the 16 weeks. If you're interested in that, let us know. Email us brutalirongym@gmail.com. If you want any help with just training programming and structuring and things like that, also let us know at brutalirongym@gmail.com. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. If you like the podcast, please share it. The more people who share share the podcast with and more people we can help. So that's pretty awesome. So thank you very much. If the podcast has helped you, please share it so we can help other people as well. Thank you to the patrons of the podcast, people who financially support the podcast on the Podbean platform. They've become patrons of the podcast and give us some financial assistance. So thank you. We also have podcast donation links on our Instagram homepage as well. The podcast is several thousands of dollars, so we really do appreciate the financial help. It's only thanks to the patrons of the podcast that we're able to do this every day and help hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of freaking people, which is freaking great. So thank you. If you like the information we share in our podcast, you can find more from us on social media channels on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube under the name Brutal Iron Jim. If you have any questions, feedback, suggestions, anything that you want to know, let us know at our email, brutalironjim@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.